Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Outbeat Now. If you're a first-time listener to Outbeat Radio, you'll find us here every Sunday night from 8 to 9 p.m. with a different show each week. Outbeat Now, this show, is a public affairs show featuring news, events, and information for and about the LGBT community here in the North Bay. I'm Greg Moralia. My co-host, Jeff Basham, is off tonight. Well, I hope you all enjoyed a very wonderful and filling Thanksgiving holiday. Gosh, it's really hard to believe the holiday shopping season is already here and well underway. And tonight, our first guest has some really important information to share about how you can protect yourself from identity theft, especially now while so many of us will be shopping online. Darren Mazaika is here, and he's a fraud and identity theft investigator with Wells Fargo Bank. He's got a lot of law enforcement experience in his background as well, and he'll be here to give us the best tips for protecting yourself. And then in the second half of the hour, Denny Terrio joins us from Canada for the Outbeat Youth segment. He's a wonderful young actor I discovered last month while I was putting together the special we aired about Matthew Shepard. That's all coming up tonight, right after the Outbeat Radio news for this Sunday, November 27th, 2011. America paid tribute last week to a gay icon. The director of the United States Office of Personnel Management, John Berry, and several members of the United States Congress said farewell to Dr. Frank Edward Kameny and thanked him for paving the path toward equality that LGBT America is set to realize. William Estridge Jr., a professor of jurisprudence at Yale University, and Representatives Barney Frank of Massachusetts, Eleanor Holmes Norton of the District of Columbia, and Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin spoke at a special service held in the historic Cannon Caucus Room.
Before he died, Frank and Kameny had already won a place reserved for Americans who made personal sacrifices for human rights.
He was the Rosa Parks of the LGBT rights movement.
Frank Kameny really invented gay rights, and he forgot to copyright it. If Frank had had a good enough in the property lawyer, he would have been a very rich man.
His life cleared the path that I and countless others followed into public service. His unrelenting and unceasing fight for gay rights enabled other Americans to step out of the closet and into the full light.
My own introduction to Frank Kameny came when I was in college. I was coming out. And at the time, I sought everything that I could find to read that would give what I was going through some sort of greater context. And I have to tell you that the materials at the time were few and far between.
He summoned something few of us have, raw, pure courage.
In the early 1970s, the American Psychiatric Association met here in Washington, D.C. Frank Kameny and a small band of avowed homosexuals stormed the podium of the APA and denounced them to their faces.
You are our enemy. You are our oppressors. You persecute us, and you're going to stop.
And they did.
Kameny became known as the first gay person to fight the federal government because of his dismissal on the grounds of homosexuality from his job as an astronomer in 1957. In rhetoric that goes beyond blaming the victim, Rush Limbaugh is saying teachers and administrators at Lawrence King's school bear responsibility for his death because they encouraged him to express his sexual identity. On his radio show last week, Limbaugh said E.O. Green Middle School in Oxnard, California, where gay student King was shot to death by classmate Brandon McKierney back in 2008, was pushing an agenda. McKierney stood trial for the crime this summer, but a mistrial was declared after jurors could not agree on a verdict. Last Monday, he agreed to a plea deal, pleading guilty to second-degree murder and voluntary manslaughter, which will bring him a 21-year prison sentence. McKierney, now 17, was 14 at the time of the shooting, and King was just 15. And 33 years ago today, Harvey Milk died after being shot by former supervisor Dan White. Milk was the first openly gay man to be elected to public office in the United States. The GLBT History Museum, located on 18th Street just up from Castro in San Francisco, invites you to learn more about Harvey Milk by visiting the museum and to see a special display of Milk's belongings, including a vintage cassette recorder playing Milk's famous Political Will. This is the statement he tape recorded for playing, as he said, quote, "in the event of my death by assassination." The museum is open daily, and admission is only $5. You can learn more at www.glbthistory.org. Now here's your calendar of events for the coming week. On Thursday, December 1st, Dining Out for Life happens at 80 different restaurants located throughout Sonoma County. This annual event benefits Food for Thought, Sonoma County Food Bank. You can learn more about all the restaurants at www.diningoutforlife.com. And on Saturday, December 3rd at 7:30 p.m., the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus performs their Home for the Holidays concert, benefiting Face to Face. Tickets start at $25. And for more information and to purchase your tickets, go to www.f2f.org. If you have news or an event you'd like to share with our listeners, you can tell us about it by going to our own website at outbeatradio.com. Just click on Outbeat News. For Gary Carnevale, I'm Greg Moralia.
Say, tell it like it is.
Well, as you just heard in our news segment, the Dining Out for Life event happens this coming Thursday, and here to tell us more about this delicious event is Don Spradlin, who's the Food for Thought Director of Development and the Director of Dining Out for Life here in Sonoma County. Don, welcome to Outbeat Now.
Thank you. It's great to be here and talk about this event.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. My mouth is watering already. Can you give us a brief history about the Dining Out event, both nationally and here locally?
Sure. Dining Out for Life started back in the late 80s in Philadelphia. It was a fundraiser that somebody came up with that year to help raise money for an AIDS organization, a service organization in Philadelphia. That's when a lot of AIDS service organizations kind of got formed. They were formed and started raising money to support their activity. And Dining Out for Life turned out to be a great model for fundraising. From that year, it has grown to be in 70 cities now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's there's a national board that kind of manages how it gets assigned to a new city, and they keep the focus on raising money for AIDS service organizations. Sonoma County is one of those 70, I guess, locations. We shouldn't say cities. But we are the 10th largest out of the 70 locations.
Great, great. So tell us how it all works.
Well, the way it works is that on one day, we go out and sign up restaurants who have agreed to donate a portion of their daily receipts directly to Food for Thought. Now, Food for Thought is the Sonoma County AIDS Food Bank. And last year, for example, we had 68 restaurants and raised over $105,000 that one day.
That's incredible.
That is incredible. That's a huge amount of money. Our budget is $1 million a year. I mean, we basically spend 10 cents on the dollar running the organization, and 90 cents of it goes to buying food. And so it's really an efficient use of money, and to raise over 10% of our budget on one day is just huge. So the restaurants are doing us a gigantic favor.
Well, tell us about some of the restaurants that are participating.
Yeah, that's the fun part. We have asked restaurants to sign up again. Some of them have been doing it for 10 years. And the way it works, we send them a contract or a letter and saying, please sign on and agree to either pay 25 or 50% of your daily receipts directly to us as a donation. It's just an amazing joint effort. I mean, it's grown into be a big day. As I was going to say, the day always is the Thursday after Thanksgiving. And this year, that happens to fall on World AIDS Day, December 1st.
Which makes it all that much more meaningful.
Exactly. Not only is it our 10th anniversary, but it's World AIDS Day. That's just a coincidence. But it also is really a powerful way to remind people that they, you know, if you want to do something important and support an AIDS organization, this is the perfect thing. And all you have to do is go out and eat.
And there's some great restaurants on here in virtually every city in the county, from Bodega Bay up to Windsor and out to Sonoma.
Last year we had 68 restaurants. This year we have 80. I've enjoyed working with them. They are generous. They've said yes. We'll be happy to make a donation that day. And there's a couple of interesting things that about the restaurant list I want to tell you. First of all, we have clients all over Sonoma County, and we deliver food to 40% of our clients who are maybe not well enough to come in and pick up their groceries. So we have volunteers taking food to every corner of the county, and yet in some of the areas like Sonoma Valley, we're not as well known as we are in West County. So, for example, last year we had 2 restaurants participate in Sonoma. So this year I went to Sonoma personally, and I walked around the square, and I recruited 10 restaurants in one afternoon who said, sure, we'll do it. And I'm really excited about that additional outreach, because Sonoma is an important town for us, and now we have 10 restaurants there.
That's great. So tell us where people can go to learn more about the event itself, as well as to see a listing of all the restaurants.
Well, there's the main website is allthewords.com, diningoutforlife.com. So that is a national website. You can click on the Sonoma County menu pull down, and it will list all the restaurants, and there's a way to contact them. We recommend that people make a reservation, and we would love it if you say you're going to the restaurant for Dining Out for Life, because we want them to know that's why you're there. Also, as I mentioned, all the newspapers are going to be printing lists of the restaurants. So that's in the Press Democrat, the Sonoma Index Tribune, the Sonoma West. The list is already in the Gazette. So you can go to the newspaper and find the list on some days. And then you can call the food bank if you somehow can't find the list. And the food bank number is 707-887-1647. And we can give you some directions.
Perfect. Well, I know my partner Tony and I are all set to dine out at one of our favorite places in Santa Rosa, the Sea-Tai Bistro.
Oh, so, yeah?
Oh, you bet. So I hope everybody will come out and join us there or at one of the 80 restaurants here in Sonoma County participating in this year's Dining Out for Life event. Once again, it's this Thursday, December 1st. Don, thanks so much for joining us tonight on Outbeat Now.
Thank you. I love talking about my favorite subject, eating out.
And if you're just joining us, you're listening to Outbeat Now here on KRCB Radio. Our next guest is Darren Mazaika, who is a fraud and identity theft investigator with Wells Fargo Bank. And now that the shopping season's here upon us, I've asked him to come in and talk with us a little bit about identity theft prevention and how you can keep yourself protected from fraud and other kinds of bad things that happen around the holiday season. Darren, welcome to Outbeat Now.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, you've been in law enforcement for some time now. Why don't you give our listeners a little bit of a background on where you've worked and how you got into this law enforcement arena?
Well, I started as a police officer in 2002 with the Moraga Police Department. Worked there from 2002 to 2006 when I was medically retired. And then started with Wells Fargo Bank in 2007 as a fraud investigator.
So tell us a little bit more about what do you do actually for Wells Fargo?
I actually investigate all fraud against the bank and its customers.
Okay. And I understand you also do some community education work, too. I mean, a lot of this is prevention, right?
Absolutely. As an investigator, it's our job to help promote awareness and prevention to the customers in order to make them aware of what's going on and techniques to prevent fraud so it helps the bank and its customers.
That's great. Well, of course, that's what you're here to do tonight for some of our listeners. And I know that identity theft and fraud has been really a growing problem. So let's start out with ATM cards. How do people steal money and identity using someone else's ATM card if they don't have it?
Well, when you talk about an ATM card, most of the time people are actually talking about a debit card. An ATM card is specifically used at an ATM machine, and a debit card can be used at stores like a credit card. And so when you're talking about a debit card, it can be compromised or duplicated and skimmed, and so it's duplicated and counterfeited into someone else's name, but your account information is then used to make a debit card, and your money's being taken out of your checking account without you even realizing it.
So what I've seen from some training stuff that I've watched in the past is that people will actually put some sort of a device on an ATM. So if I'm walking up to an ATM, what should I look for to make sure that my information off of my card isn't being stolen?
Yeah, the device it's called is what a skimmer. It's called a skimmer. And basically, it's a device that's attached to the front of an ATM machine. And as you insert your card, it's reading all the information on the back of the card, the black stripe, and it's reading all the personal data on your card. When you approach the ATM, what you're looking for is anything that looks abnormal. When you go to the ATM, everything appears to be the same. If you see anything unusual, go into the branch if it's open and just say, hey, something looks abnormal. If everything appears to be fine with the device, then it's fine. But if by small percentage that there is a skimming device, then you've noticed it just by being aware of your surroundings and what should be on an ATM. Just by taking an extra second and looking at the device just to make sure that there isn't anything attached to the front of the machine.
So maybe even, you know, wiggle it to make sure nothing comes off.
Absolutely. Just the extra second of wiggling the card reader.
Okay. What about credit cards? I've heard that they're more secure than, say, a debit card or an ATM card.
Well, with a credit card, the advantage is you're not actually going to be losing money. The bank will be the one that's going to be taking the financial loss. It's not your personal information that's going to be compromised. It's going to be the banks. They're the ones that are upfronting the money. So if it does become compromised, the bank will be the one losing the money, not the customer.
Okay. Are there any rules or guides for protecting your credit card? You know, I see a lot of my friends, they have this wallet that is, you know, several inches thick with different cards, and I only carry one. Is that a good practice? Should you carry all your cards with you all the time when you're out shopping, or take the one you're going to use?
It's recommended. I personally recommend you only really need one credit card on you at all times, or one debit card. People carry multiple credit cards, gas cards, store cards, like different types of department stores.
Right.
You really don't need that. If you go to a department store, you can have the cashier look up your account information. You don't need to carry the department store card if you're going to go to that specific store to make a purchase. Just have them look up your account information instead of carrying the card in your wallet.
Sure. Well, tomorrow is Cyber Monday. And so a lot of people will be shopping online. Give us some thoughts and some tips about how we can protect our identities and our credit information, you know, shopping online.
People always ask me if online shopping is more of a risk or not. Online is probably going to be more secure, actually. You just have to make sure that you actually go to the real website by typing in from a search engine. Sometimes it will have HTTPS, which means that it's secure, rather than HTTP.
Up in the URL, the little
yes.
web address.
So okay. Just make sure it's a secure website, and go from there. Just make sure you're going to a secure website.
Okay, and so if I'm looking at a website, I can look up at the URL and look for that HTTPS, but what are some other signs on a store website that it's a secure site that I can use my credit card on?
It will have a lock. If it has a lock on it, that means it's also secure.
Okay. And is there a VeriSign or something like that, or a seal I can look for?
I've Absolutely. Seen it will have a verifying sign.
It's pretty interesting that you say that buying online is actually more secure than in person.
Absolutely. Technology is getting more and more secure, especially with financial institutions. It's the technology going into making sure that these sites are secure is getting pretty sophisticated. So it's good.
Interesting. So tell me about some of the other things that we shouldn't carry with us, you know, routinely.
The number one thing you should definitely not carry in your wallet is your Social Security card. There's no need to really carry it unless you have a specific reason that you need to carry it, for maybe a doctor's office or going to DMV, or if some reason you do need to carry it, then you should carry it. But other than that, you do not need or should not carry your Social Security card out with you at any reason.
And I would imagine that if you're going to a doctor's office or someplace that needs the number, you can write that number down or somehow code it and hide it someplace else in your wallet rather than carrying the actual card itself, right?
Absolutely. You should never carry the Social Security card because that's the number one item that thieves need in order for you to be a victim of identity theft.
So tell us a little bit more about then how someone steals your identity. I get your social security number. What are some of the other vulnerable points of or pieces of information about you that could cause someone to assume your identity?
The three main items that a suspect needs or a thief needs in order to for you to be a victim of identity theft is your social security number, your date of birth, and your mother's maiden name.
So even on websites like social networking sites that ask for your birth date, I guess what I'm hearing you say is it's probably not a good idea to even put your real birth date on there.
It, not to put the whole month, day, and year. On, say, if a website like Facebook, you can put your month and your day, but you don't have to put your date or year that you were born in. So
good
just
idea.
Put your month in the day, but don't put your year, because suspects can look up everything and find out what your date of birth, and they can also find out what your mom's name was and then her what her married name was. So they already have two things that they need in order for you to be a victim.
And how would they go about getting that information through?
Well, if they're on Facebook, they can look up if your mom has a page, and then if she has her maiden name on her Facebook page, then they're able to get those two pieces of information on there.
Kind of crafty, huh? Well, I guess it would be, yeah. Okay, so that's good information. You can at least put the month and the day on, because you certainly wouldn't want to miss all those birthday wishes on Facebook now, would you?
Exactly.
Exactly. I've heard a lot of people who've had their mail stolen out of their mailbox. Tell us about some of the risks that come with having a mailbox that isn't secured.
If it's not secure, the number one thing people shouldn't do is put the flag up. It's kind of like a welcome sign for thieves. When people pay their bills and then they stick it in the mailbox and then they let the post person know that they were there's mail in the mailbox by putting the flag up. Well, they're going to put mail anyways in, so why do you need to put the flag up? So it's not recommended that you put outgoing mail in your mailbox. You can either put it in a regular mailbox to be picked up or go to the post office, but it's not recommended that you put outgoing mail inside your mailbox unless it's a secure mailbox.
Now, some of my older friends have said that they don't trust paying their bills online. They would rather write the check and send it in the mail. From your experience, have there been more incidents where people's identity have been taken from information found in the mail or from, for example, paying your bill online?
More from the mail. People can steal the checks, they can wash the checks, and identity is stolen through the mail rather than online, because online is more secure.
So washing a check, what's that all about?
Basically, they put the checks in basically acetone, what lifts off the ink, and then they can write the check to the amount and to the person payable for whoever they want.
Stealing the money right out of your account.
Exactly.
Wow. So when you talk to clients at Wells Fargo and you say, here are the top five most important tips or top 10 most important tips for protecting your identity, what do you tell people?
The five most important things would be: make sure you're aware that you check your credit. Make sure you don't have any open credit accounts that you're unaware of. I check my credit report twice a year, every 6 months.
Now, how would someone go about doing that?
You can go to reliable credit reporting companies. MyFICO is a good one. That's the one I personally go to. There's other agencies out there that you can go to and purchase your credit reports.
So would it be a good idea to check with your local bank?
You know, exactly. A lot of financial institutions offer for a small fee to have a credit reporting.
Okay. What else?
Make sure if you do get bills or have a shredder that's just not a regular shredder, but it also cuts across wise as well. So
really, so just a typical shredder that does the vertical shred isn't good enough anymore?
No, because suspects have been arrested where they've taped together vertical shreds. They'll spend the time to tape everything together.
Seems
so
desperate.
Yes. So make sure you shred everything that you for bills or everything that you're going to be throwing away that has any personal information on.
I know I get in the mail just tons of free credit card offers, and I've heard that those should also be shredded. Even though I haven't filled it out with any personal information, what do you think?
You'd definitely be shredded, or if you're allowed to in your county, burn them.
Okay. Wow. So what else would you recommend?
Just to keep on top of your finances, be aware of what's going in and out of your accounts. If you don't check daily on your accounts, maybe you should. People will wait 1 month or 2 months to check their statements. I check my account daily. Maybe you should check it once a week, once a month, but be aware of what's going in and out of your checking accounts.
So what are some of the other indicators then? If I'm checking my my credit card statement regularly, what are some of the other indicators that my identity may have been stolen?
If you're getting statements in the mail that you don't recognize, or from companies on the phone that you don't realize that you're past due and you're unfamiliar of what company it is, it's an indicator that there's a collection agency on a credit card that doesn't belong to you that was opened up fraudulently. So they're indicators, and you have to put stuff together, and it's going to be work, but it's an indicator that you're a victim of an identity theft.
And you just reminded me about another thing that I see periodically in the email. I get an email that says, your account is subject to being closed. We need to verify your account number or your password. Is that common for banks to do in an email?
Not via email. Usually if you receive an email asking for personal identifying information such as account numbers, date of birth, social security numbers, most likely will be a scam. I'm not going to say 100% of the time that's going to be a scam, but most of the time it will be a scam. They won't be asking for personal account or personal information via email.
So if you get an email like that, that's maybe it's offering you something if you check in or update your account information or whatever it happens to be, and you're not sure if it's legit from your bank, what should you do?
I would call the financial institution that you belong to, saying you've received an email, and usually their fraud department will handle the situation. They'll probably request that you forward the email to them, and then they will start an investigation.
Okay. And so if you suspect that you've been a victim of identity theft, let's say that you get a bill or a statement showing that you bought a brand new car when you know that you didn't, what do you do?
There's multiple steps. What you first need to do is contact the financial institution where the account was opened up and tell them that you were a victim of identity theft and that you did not open up the account or authorize anyone to open the account. Secondly, you need to file a police report with the local law enforcement agency, which is either a local law enforcement or a county sheriff's department. Thirdly, you need to contact the Federal Trade Commission, which is in charge of all identity theft. And they're the ones that oversee all reporting of identity theft. And fourth thing is you need to contact the credit bureau in order and alert them that you've been a victim of identity theft, and they'll send you a free credit report.
Okay. And will they put some sort of freeze on your credit?
They'll put an alert on it, and they won't freeze it, but they'll put an alert on it and temporarily block it, but will not freeze it.
Okay. And what about electronic signatures? I'm seeing a lot of that now, particularly with online transactions. Is that a lawful way to sign something? And is there any protections or any ideas around protecting your signature online?
An electronic signature is going to be a legal binding signature, especially in the state of California. It is a legal signature. So if you do agree to the terms and conditions and you do hit submit, it is considered a legal signature.
Great, great. Some great advice, particularly as we get into this busy, busy shopping season. We've been talking with Darren Mazaika, who is an identity theft and fraud investigator with Wells Fargo Bank. Thanks for being with us tonight. We appreciate all that good advice.
Thank you.
So before we take our music break, I have a couple of free tickets to give away. Next Saturday night, the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus will be performing Joyous Jolly Jingles at the Center for Spiritual Living, 2075 Occidental Road. That's next Saturday night, December 3rd at 7:30 p.m. If you'd like a couple of free tickets to that event, this benefiting face-to-face, give us a call at 584-2020, 584-2020. Be caller number 2, and we'll give you a couple of free tickets. We're going to take a music break, and then we'll be back with the Outbeat Youth segment. Here's Robin with Hang With Me.
Will you tell me once again how we're going to be just friends? If you're for real and not pretend, then I guess you can't hang. Wearing thin. you see me drift astray, at a touch and at a place. Will you tell me to my face, then I guess you can hang with me. And if you do me right, I'm gonna do right by you. And if you keep it tight, I'm gonna confide in you. I know what's on your mind, there will be time for that too, if you hang.
Listening to Outbeat Now on KRCB FM Santa Rosa. That was Hang With Me from Robin. It's time now for the Outbeat Youth segment. And welcome everyone to this month's edition of Outbeat Youth. I'm Greg Moralia. Outbeat Youth is a segment for and about the LGBT youth community here in the North Bay and beyond, and you'll find us here every month as part of Outbeat Now. Well, last month I produced a special radio show about Matthew Shepard, and if you remember, he was the 21-year-old gay man who was murdered in a vicious hate crime back in 1998 in Laramie, Wyoming. And while I was searching for examples of how Matthew's story changed people's lives, I came across a young man named Denny Terrio from Canada. He produced a YouTube video about Matt's story and how it impacted him. And I interviewed him for that radio special, and I've asked him to join us here tonight to share more of his own story. Denny Terrio, welcome to Outbeat Youth.
Oh, thank you for having me, Greg. I appreciate it.
Well, I found you, or met you, online. You produced an amazing video about Matthew Shepard and how his story influenced your life. We'll hear more about that in a little bit, but tell us a little bit about where you are, where you grew up, and your coming out story.
Well, to begin, I'm from the east coast of Canada, from a province named New Brunswick. I'm from the capital, Fredericton, and I grew up with two loving parents. They were pretty open for the most part. They grew up in a smaller town in New Brunswick called Grand Falls, so they are still of the small town mentality, especially my dad. And so, you know, I first realized that I first told myself that I was gay when I was 14. Of course, growing up, you know, I had these feelings towards the same sex, and I had no idea what it meant, because Fredericton is a fairly big city, but there aren't that many visible gay people, and that I knew of anyway. And I didn't even know what being gay or being a gay person meant. I didn't know what that meant. I didn't even know that was a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
But I first realized I was gay when I was 14. I was I first admitted it to myself, and I was flipping through a magazine. It was just a movie magazine, and I was looking at it was like the hot people in movies type of thing. So it was hot actors and hot actresses, and I kept flipping through, and I was looking at the girls, and then I was looking at the guys, and I kept finding myself more drawn towards the guys. And then the funniest thing, this ad comes up for a concert that NSYNC was doing at Madison Square Gardens. It was going to be broadcast on, I think, HBO. And right in the smack dab in the middle was Justin Timberlake. And I just remember this so vividly. And I just remember seeing him. And I just told myself, yep, I like that. That's what I like. That's what I'm attracted to. And so it was that moment that it was like that switch where in my head I had admitted to myself that, okay, I'm gay.
Wow. So yeah. Justin Timberlake made you gay.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm sure that's not the first time that's happened.
Oh, I'm pretty sure you're right.
So you were 14. What grade in school were you at that point?
Oh, wow. Let me think. That would probably be
eighth grade?
Seventh or eighth grade, yeah.
So what was it like for you? I mean, were you afraid at the time, or what was the school environment like?
Well, my school, like I said, Fredericton is a fairly, I'm pretty sure it's 75,000-80,000 for population, but my first language is French primarily, so I went to the only French school in the city, Ecole Sainte-Anne, and my graduating class was no more than, I think, 68 people. So you go to the same school from kindergarten to 12th grade. You don't switch from, you know, back and forth. So, you know, there are some people that I went from kindergarten to 12th grade and graduated with. So, you know, you grow up with these people and they see you every day. You know, so for the most part, I think that a lot of people suspected it. You know, but we were such a close-knit group that I was never directly bullied that much. You know, I would hear people say things behind my back, or someone would say, hey, someone has been saying this about you, or, but never, like, I've never been pushed into a locker, or I've never been directly called, not that I can recall, like, I've never been called bad words, derogatory terms, or anything like that.
So how did it go when you told your parents?
Well, at that time, I think I was 19. I'd just dropped out of university for film studies because I wanted to pursue acting, and I had just been cast in my first big movie. And I was in between dropping out of school and being cast in that movie, I was living with my mother. My parents had separated the year before I graduated high school. So my mom was in her own little place, and I was staying with her for the time. And I don't know, there's something in me that just, I knew I had to tell her. And it took about a week. You know, every night I would just be up in my room stressing, you know, my heartbeat was sky high, and I was just thinking, how can I tell her? And then there'd be moments where I'd be sitting on my bed and just be like, okay, just go, just walk into a room right now and do it. And I just couldn't, you know, it was just like, I was just blocked. Like, I couldn't even move my body. And so then eventually at the end of, you know, 6 or 7 days, I just said, okay, you know what? I just thought of it all on my own. It's no one that made me do it, but I was just like, I know I'll feel better. When I finally did tell her, I couldn't say the words myself. I was just on her bed, and I was mentally blocked, and I couldn't. I was like, I have something to tell you, and then I just couldn't get it out. So she started guessing things like, did you get a girl pregnant? And things like that. I was like, well, not exactly. So, you know, and eventually she said, well, are you gay? And I said, yeah, I am. And she just paused for like 3 or 4 seconds. It felt like an eternity to me. But she said, that's okay. And you know, it sounds so cliche because you hear people say it all the time. But my mom said, you know, I still love you. And I felt that, you know, I knew it right away. And it's almost like, for her, the switch was flipped in her head. And immediately she's like, okay, well, I have a gay son, and I'm going to start treating him as such, and she didn't play into the stereotypes at all. She was just, you know, asked me if there was any guys I thought were cute and things like that. And this is one of my favorite anecdotes, is that I went to my little day job I had at that point at a video store the following day, and when I came back home, right on my desk in my room was a cellophane wrapped Playgirl magazine.
Oh wow.
This is the day after, Greg, and you know, so that just goes to show you how, you know, I know how lucky I am, because I have heard some horrific stories from friends of mine of their coming out. So to me, like, I think it's more than an ideal coming out story, because my mom was just, you know, wide open arms receiving that.
How incredible is that?
Oh yeah, it's you know, and my mom loves to tell the story too, because you know, at the time she didn't think much of it, but to me it meant like, oh my god, like, she's not only okay with it, she's buying me a Playgirl magazine. You know what I mean?
That is amazing.
Yeah, it you know, it's just by doing that to her, to me, it just said, with even out, like, without hearing her say the words, it's like, you know what, I'm totally okay with you being this way, and it's just, you know. It was nothing to her. It was just, you know, I was her son, and it didn't matter who I you know, put my head next to at night. It doesn't matter. It's just like as if my eyes were brown or my hair was black, you know?
Sure.
It's just another facet of who I am.
Well, tell us about this acting career.
As far as acting, yeah, I've always been interested. When I was a kid, around like 7 or 8, I used to do a lot of singing. I just, you know, I somehow just fell into singing. So I did a lot of just performances here and there. And at one point I sang for like, Princess Anne, I remember, came to Fredericton, and I was the main entertainer, which was pretty big for me. And just things like that, you know, and then I delved more into when I went into high school or junior high, I guess, started making my own short films with my friends, with my old 8mm video camera. And I just loved it. I knew I loved film right away. And when I was 14, actually around the time that I, you know, told myself I was gay, I got cast in a really cheesy sci-fi show, which will go unnamed right now. And, you know, so that was my kind of first taste on a bigger scale of acting in film. You know, just being on a film set to me was the most exhilarating thing in the world. And, you know, not only did I develop a love for acting, but I developed a love for filmmaking. So I kept acting. I got cast in a film 4 or 5 years ago now, in 2007, called Growing Up. And I play the high school reject. So I definitely used, you know, although I wasn't a high school reject per se in my own life, I used a lot of aspects of, you know, being gay and being, you know, feeling isolated and things like that, and I used that for that character. So it definitely, being gay did help me in that case. And at that time, you know, I started dating a little bit. I'm a very shy person to begin with, so, you know, I didn't tell anyone, and for fear of casting directors finding out. So even when I moved to Toronto to pursue acting full time and got an agent and everything, it would have been my worst nightmare for my agent to find out that I was gay, because, you know, what if he did, and then he wouldn't submit me for, you know, Degrassi, which was one of my dreams to be on, and I did get the chance to audition for it. Then when I heard about these suicides, I just, something clicked in me, and I said, you know, it's ridiculous that these kids think that they have nothing to live for, that it's so bad to be gay that, you know, that they end their own life, and they cut it short, and they, you know, who knows what their life could have been. So I just said, it's, for some reason, it just made me realize, you know what, it's not that big of a deal. Again, it's just another facet of who you are. It does not define you, and it shouldn't be something that you try to hide and try to, it shouldn't be this big mountain, is what I'm saying. Is, of course, I'm not to take away, I know coming out is hard, of course, because I've been there, but like, once you're out and you know, trying to hide it from people was making my life more of a living hell than anything. I just made the video and posted it on my Facebook for all of my, and you know, all my work friends were on there, and the feedback was phenomenal. You know, I heard back from people from high school that I hadn't heard from since I graduated, and people tell me, oh my God, I had no idea. And or some of them are like, oh, I had an idea, but I'm so glad that you're out now and that you're, you know, you're, you know, living your life to the fullest and things like that. So to me, the It Gets Better thing was not only beneficial to maybe the few that watched the video and got, you know, a supportive, I guess, push out of it, but to me, it boosted me. It unleashed me. From that point on, I didn't care who knew I was gay.
Do you think that you saw these more as obstacles than other people did?
Maybe. I think the fact that I wanted to pursue a career in acting and seeing a lot of people, like a lot of actors in Hollywood who are, which I'm sure a lot of them are still closeted, I figured, you know, if they're going through all this trouble to hide their sexuality to be successful, then I have to do that too, right? I didn't know any better because that's all I saw, you know? I'm a big movie fan. I love celebrity culture. So I fed on that. I looked at what they were doing, and you know, you'd hear rumors about this actor or that actor, and people saying, oh, their career is going to be finished if it comes out. And so it just fed into my fear of that. So,
right. Well, the video you made is about Matthew Shepard. Tell us a little bit about how Matthew's story influenced your life.
Well, as I talk about in the video, I was 12 when the actual events occurred, and you know, so I didn't hear anything about it, and it's not something that I think my mother would have gone out of her way to tell me about, because it was a very brutal crime. But then it was a few years later when the Laramie Project, the movie, came out. I was working at Jumbo Video, and I remember seeing the cover and reading the back, and I was around 14 or 15 when that movie came out on DVD, if I recall correctly. And I remember seeing it, and then after I saw it, I tried to eat up or find as much information on the case and on Judy and Dennis Shepard as much as I could. And like I talk in the video too, it really did scare me, because I think initially the story of Matthew and what happened to Matthew Shepard, you know, it did scare me because he pretty much got, you know, murdered for being who he was, because he was living his life like out and proud, as far as I could tell. And he, you know, someone took his life because of it. So to me, like to a 14, 15 year old kid, it's who's struggling with that, already. And then to hear that, it really did scare me, you know. I didn't really think something like that could happen in Fredericton. I'd like to think that people were still a little bit more open-minded than that. But initially, it definitely did scare me. Now, again, since last year, starting the whole YouTube thing, I realized that everything, like, it's almost like Matthew's death was a catalyst, and everything that's happened since his death, especially on the part of Judy and Dennis, it started this whole perpetual, it started this whole big movement, you know? And a lot of kids around that time and up until now have gained strength, and you know, it enraged, you know, our generation, and it made them want to be more active in what happens in politics and in concern with like human rights and things like that. So, you know, in the end, I think from such a brutal crime, so much good has come out of it, you know. And like I talk in the video too, the Matthew Shepard Act was signed. You know, it took a good while to happen, but you know, maybe it wouldn't have happened so soon if it weren't for what happened to Matthew.
Right. So, Denny, tell us what inspired you to start making videos and posting them on YouTube.
Well, interestingly enough, you know, once I made my It Gets Better video, it's, again, it lit a flame inside of me, and I figured, you know what, well, I'm an actor, and, you know, I might as well use my little, you know, whatever I have, personality or, you know, like hosting abilities, to be able to talk to people on YouTube. I mean, to me, I'd never even gone on YouTube before, except to watch, you know, stupid little videos, but I discovered this whole online, especially gay online community of people that were so supportive, and it just blew my mind. I thought, you know, where did these people come from? Where were these people when I was struggling, and then I realized, well, the internet and especially YouTube was in its infancy when I was dealing with those things, right? So I figured, I wished something like this would have existed when I was coming out, and then it just clicked. I was like, well, there's kids right now, looking at their computer screens, longing for someone to tell them that it's going to be okay. So after the It Gets Better video and the great response I got, I just kept making videos out of, you know, and I wasn't getting paid or anything. This was just it was literally just me thinking, what would my 14-year-old self want? So that's what the content that I started creating. Eventually, you know, I've grown to have I'm almost at 3,000 subscribers. And through YouTube, I've received letters from all over the world. People telling me, I've literally had people tell me that, you know, they wouldn't be alive if it weren't for me. And I mean, to hear that I can't even wrap my head around it. It's crazy, you know?
It is crazy. That's just shows the incredible power of your message.
And you know what I mean? Like, it's, and when I fold upon myself and think at the end of the day, like at the end of any day, and I think, my God, I'm just one person, and you know, and I've been where these people have been, you know, to a varying degree. Some people are in worse situations, but it blows my mind that I can touch someone so drastically that I'm saving their life and that I'm allowing them to, live all the life experiences that they're now going to live because they've chosen to live. And it's so humbling, and it's just it's overwhelming actually sometimes when I think about it.
Sure.
Again, so out of that, to answer your question, Robert House from the Matthew Shepard Foundation, I think he's a recruiter. I forget his exact title, but he messaged me on YouTube and said, hey, I don't know if it'd be something you'd be interested in, but you know, I work with the Matthew Shepard Foundation, and you know, we're always trying to think of new ways to reach youth. And he said, you know, just generally, he's like, is there anything you'd like to participate in or create to help us doing that? So I didn't know what to do initially, and then he suggested, you know what, just tell the story of how Matthew's story has affected you. And that's how the video came to be. It took me a few weeks to think about it and fully realize what Matthew Shepard's effect had been on me, directly and indirectly. Again, it's all these series of events that I just can't believe that, you know, I get to live this, because it's so, you know, I could live the rest of my life just doing this and live on very minimal income and be so complete as a person and so fulfilled and happy, because it's so fulfilling to be able to reach people like that. And somehow I never expected in a million years for my video to actually be featured on the website, which again was a mind-blowing thing for me. I couldn't believe it, because I literally just make every video that I make, I just make it out of because I want to, you know. There's no other intention behind it. You know, it's not that I want to become YouTube famous. The only reason I would want to gain fame in any way on YouTube would be to be able to spread it to make as many people aware of my message as possible.
Right. So tell us about the website and where people can find you.
Well, I don't have a personal website, but it's on, if you go on YouTube, you just search for Denactor, Denactor. So that's the name of my channel. And I think I'm up to almost 40 videos, currently. So that's how you can find me. And, I do have a Facebook fan page as well. You just search for Denactor. So that's on Facebook as well.
Great. And we'll have both of those links on the Outbeat Youth website at outbeatyouth.com. Denny, tell us what's next for you. What's the future look like?
Well, currently, like I said, I live in Halifax with my boyfriend, and I've just veered my attention again towards filmmaking. I'm making the switch from acting to filmmaking, because, like I said, I initially went to university for film studies but dropped out. So now I've actually started my own film production company. It's called Fourth Wall Films. And what that stands for is when you're an actor, you always, either on stage or in front of a camera, you always have a fourth wall up and you act as if the camera or the audience isn't there. And so now I'm, you know, taking that fourth wall down and going to the other side, and I'm going behind the camera. So I'm taking all the knowledge that I've gained through all my years on film sets, because I always say that film sets to me are always a classroom environment. I treat them as a classroom. So whenever I'm on a film set, I look, I ask questions, I look at the filmmakers, I look at the choices they're making. And so it's, to me, it's a free education. And I was getting paid to be an actor, but I also getting free education. So I'm taking all of that and putting it into my own entity.
Fantastic. Well, Denny, thanks so much for being with us tonight on Outbeat Youth. Your story is amazing, and give your mom a big hug for me.
I will. Thank you so much for having me, Greg. I really appreciate your time.
And you can listen to the full unedited interview with Denny on our website at outbeatyouth.com. Just click on show notes at the top of the page, and you'll also find the links we mentioned to Denny's pages on YouTube and Facebook. Well, that wraps up this edition of Outbeat Youth, as well as this month's edition of Outbeat Now. Thanks again to our special guests tonight, Darren Mazaika and Denny Terrio. Next month, the fourth Sunday of December, falls on Christmas Day, so Jeff and I are going to take that night off, but we'll be back on the fourth Sunday of January with another edition of Outbeat Now. Tune in next Sunday night at 8 p.m. for Living Proof with Sheridan Gold and Dr. Diana Grayer. And from Jeff and I, we both wish you a very happy and safe holiday season. Good night, and thanks for being with us.